You are Locked On Ravens, your daily Baltimore Ravens podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And we return here with another episode of Locked On Ravens. I'm your host, Kevin Ostreicher of Ravens Wire. This podcast is brought to you by OnlineGambling.com, the place to be for all the latest gambling news and tips throughout the NFL playoffs. Visit OnlineGambling.com/NFL to get the edge over the competition throughout this year's playoffs. We return here. It is a Thursday edition episode of Taco Thursday as Spencer Schultz joins us to talk about expectations versus reality of the Ravens 2021 season, some draft prospects, as well as some early scouting reports on them and more. So a ton to dive into today. Let's do it. But before we do that, if you are here with us on YouTube, be sure to like the video, subscribe to the channel. Our first goal here on YouTube is 1,000 subscribers. I greatly appreciate it if you've already subscribed. And if you haven't but are going to, I thank you in advance. Also, if you're here with us in audio form, so Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, be sure to turn notifications on. Our content comes out Monday through Friday at 6 a.m. Eastern time. Also, be sure to follow me on Twitter at KaleShucker34 and the Locked On Ravens account at Locked On Ravens. So, all that being said, let's dive into this Taco Thursday with Spencer Schultz of Baltimore Beatdown. Here with us today to talk about this Ravens team and kind of what the expectations versus the actual reality of the 2021 season was for this team is Spencer Schultz of Baltimore Beatdown. Spencer, obviously, we'll get into it, but the expectations of what this team was going to be in 2021 versus actually what it turned out to be, pretty different. How are you doing today?
Doing quite well. It's, fully washed over. The season is a thing of the past. We can stop worrying about injuries and who's healthy and who's not, and it feels like the blame game has calmed down. So it's draft season officially, and we're at the mercy of free agency, and we're at the mercy of situations like Bradley Bozeman, whether he stays, whether he goes. And a couple other, notes that can drop. And then, general draft coverage, we'll be able to shape a little bit more defined who the Ravens end up addressing in free agency, what position rooms, and where they ultimately do want to draft. So with that, it's just kind of generally scouting right now and getting through it and enjoying this playoff football. And it's a little bit easier to enjoy playoff football as a whole when the Ravens aren't involved. And you can kind of look at the rest of the NFL, gauge where they're at, what's working, what's not. So it's been nice in that aspect as we're getting into the offseason for the Ravens. The season's not over yet, and the Bengals are the sole remaining team from the vaunted AFC North to be in the dance.
Yeah, entering 2021, who would have thought? But again, expectations versus actual reality, and I don't think a lot of people saw this Bengals team. People thought they were good. I was on the train of, look, they're going to be like really good in a year or two, but I thought they needed a bit of time. I thought they were very young, and look, they've blown their expectations out of the water. But Spencer, the Ravens, I think a lot of people expected a lot from them in free agency in 2021. They were like, all right, who's the big signing going to be? Are they going to sign Kenny Galladay, or is it going to be this guy? And they didn't really do a ton. I mean, they made good quality moves. I think Kevin Zeitler was still a steal of a contract. They got him pretty early on. They picked up Justin Houston late in free agency. I thought, obviously that was a very good move for him. And now you're entering training camp kind of looking back, and there are super high expectations for what this team can do. You have what should have been one of the best running back duos in the league in J.K. Dobbins and Gus Edwards. You have a pass offense that was looking like it was going to improve, a defense that had a few holes here and there, but all things considered, looked to be very sound. And there are kind of two expectations here, Spencer. It was that expectation with everybody fully healthy, and then it becomes even the expectations before the season of, all right, they're down Rashad Bateman for 5 weeks, down Jimmy Smith for multiple, down Marcus Peters, down Gus Edwards, down J.K. Dobbins, L.J. Fort. What were kind of your expectations from when the Ravens started training camp and as those transitioned into, all right, all these guys are going down right now?
Yeah, it was that devastating day, I believe the Thursday before the Raiders Monday night game, where you lose Gus Edwards and Marcus Peters to impact players after you've already lost J.K. Dobbins. And on top of that, training camp was just a little bit of a nightmare with the offensive side of the football and the offensive line missing time, the wide receivers missing time, Lamar Jackson missing time, Gus Edwards missing time. All of these different players missing time, and it felt like they didn't really have a very continuous training camp or a very quiet training camp in the sense of staying out of the trainer's room. Hollywood Brown goes down. Sammy Watkins goes down. Rashad Bateman ends up needing surgery. You know, both of your running backs go down. All three of your running backs go down. Nick Boyle's out. Ronnie Stanley comes back eventually. Pat Ricard missed time. All along the offensive line, guys are missing time left and right. So it was tumultuous. The only kind of consistent competitors were James Prochet, to a degree, Devin Duvernay, and Mark Andrews, it felt like, overall. And then, you know, Tylan Wallace there as well, and some of the other guys. Miles Boykin's even out for a good bit of that. So it was tumultuous, and it never ended. It started into the season, and we saw a Ravens team that defensively couldn't finish and keep the Raiders from getting into field goal range in the end of the fourth quarter after the Ravens drive down and kick a go-ahead field goal. And from there, you know, it was just up and down from there. So you're looking at a team that you see, an explosive Raiders team at that time that did have a healthy Waller, you know, contributing Ruggs, you know, Brian Edwards and Hunter Renfro, and all these guys are healthy. They're there, they're active and making plays. And even, I mean, even Zay Jones. So from there, it kind of felt like the offensive line was an issue. Ronnie Stanley didn't play well. And then after the game, you come to find out that he's shutting it down. So from there, you know, Alejandro Villanueva, who was not expected to be your left tackle, is suddenly there and played a pretty good game against Kansas City. But overall was bad. When he lost really badly. And your offensive line's not good. You're missing a lot of guys, and it really limited what they could do. But then they were able to, you know, rise from the ashes because of Lamar Jackson's dominant play, Mark Andrews' dominant play, the connection that Hollywood Brown and Lamar Jackson had, and able to get into gear, mount some masterful comebacks and overcome some turnovers and get some, you know, they were able to kind of finish a couple games there in the fourth quarter and overtime. They were able to kind of shut down the Chiefs in the second half of a game where they had a rough first half. They were able to shut down the Vikings in the second half when they had a rough first half. They were able to shut down the Colts when they had a rough first half. A lot of different teams. So they were able to play, you know, what it was early in the season before the injuries continued to grow, that they were able to find those plays late in game to win. And even as late as against, you know, the Browns or the Bears later in the season, Lamar Jackson, Tyler Huntley, you know, defense faltered in Chicago. And then you're able to, you know, go get a play offensively, go have Sammy Watkins. You know, that was the one time where out of all of those one score games where it felt like the other team made a true mistake was against the Bears when Sammy Watkins defender falls down and is wide open and leads to a touchdown that wins the game. But other than that, you know, they just couldn't buy a finish, whether it was on the offensive side of the ball or the defensive side of the ball. And it was time and time again. In overtime, they couldn't finish. And, you know, the end of the fourth quarter, they couldn't finish. They couldn't get a stop when they needed one. They couldn't score a two-point conversion when they wanted to. All these different things. So, you know, expectations versus reality. I mean, when you're starting out without Peters and Dobbins and Boyle and Edwards and, you know, Derek Wolf never plays and all these different factors, Rashad Bateman out in the first half, you know, it felt like they were performing above what they were should have been doing and what they were, you know, truly going to be. And that's why I think John Harbaugh got so much coach of the year buzz. People are talking about Lamar Jackson's efforts, especially after that Colts game and how impressive it was. And it just wore too thin and they were able to stay in games, but they just really couldn't, especially really late, couldn't get a stop. So I think that is the expectation. That is reality. You know, at the end of the season, the teams that are playing the Rams and playing the Steelers, you know, with playoff implications, what would those teams have gone, you know, assuming that there was depth behind it to a lesser extent, but if that was your 53-man roster and then you have a practice squad beyond that, you know, how is that team going to fare over a 17-game season? You know, they're probably picking in the top 10 every single time, picking in the top five quite a bit, not going to be able to get a lot done. So they fought admirably. What they did against the Rams was really impressive. What they did against the Packers was really impressive, but it was horseshoes and hand grenades. So the expectations were high because we've seen the Ravens in the last couple of years. 2018, they're a middling 4-5 team. Well, guess what? Lamar Jackson steps in his rookie season. They go 6-1. They make the playoffs. 2019, they're this juggernaut of a team that rattles off 12 straight victories after sitting at 2-2. Then 2020, they find themselves, I believe, 7-6 or 7-5, and you know, win out to go make the playoffs and go win a playoff game finally for the first time in quite some time. So there was the expectation versus reality of what we've seen the last couple of years and what we've seen them able to do despite some struggles, you know, some key injuries here and there. They didn't have Stanley last year. You know, some things you're expecting something from what you've seen from previous experience, but it was a different situation. It was a different year. And I think the buck really starts and stops with the fact that, you know, not only just Lamar Jackson, definitely, you know, that was the most key injury to me. And not only just that he missed games, but even in the last couple of games he's playing, especially after that Bears game, he's not practicing. He's missed a ton of practice. He's been sick. You know, he hasn't been healthy. He's been on injury reports. He's missed practice three times throughout the year of sickness, and he missed training camp with COVID. So it was by no means a smooth sail of a season for Lamar Jackson in terms of just being available. And the fact that so much of it had to do with sickness was always peculiar, and a little bit of a trepidation into what this team could have done. But overall, you know, Marlon Humphrey goes down, and that's major. You're already without Peters. Your secondary has been struggling. You know, Humphrey wasn't playing at an all-world pace like he did, you know, the last couple of years, but he was able to shut down Mike Williams and the Chargers. You know, he's able to make some key plays, defend passes, and there's that confidence there where, you know, you rely on him and you trust that you have your guy. You had one terrible game against the Bengals. Ja'Marr Chase outclassed him athletically and technically at the line of scrimmage and in space. But other than that, he was having a, you know, good year. He wasn't having a great year, but it compounded. And then you end up losing more guys in the secondary. Jimmy Smith can't play, and Chris Westry can't play, and Anthony Averett ultimately can't play. And so it would have been a lot easier, I think, for expectations if the Ravens would have started to roll over and die earlier, but they didn't. And that's what set the bar higher and expectations higher, and knowing that what they were able to do in 2018 and 2020 when they needed to win, and what John Harbaugh's record in December is, and the fact that the Ravens were able to beat the Steelers in week 17 when they had all their starters rested, and they were able to beat the Steelers when they had Jimmy Clausen in, and all these different quirks. But in the end, you know, this was a middling football team that was rattled with injury. And I like to compare them to the 49ers of last year without Bosa. They're without Garoppolo. They're without Richard Sherman. They're without all these players that they expected in 2020. And, you know, they end up being a 6-win team. And the Ravens, it felt the same, but it feels like they're going to be in a decent situation to have some turnover. They've got a chip on their shoulder. They want to prove themselves next year. You hear Chuck Clark, who had a really nice year this year and was one of the constant players, able to walk up to the press, you know, the podium after the final game and say, watch how we bounce back, and walks away. He doesn't answer any questions because that's the chip they have on their shoulder now. So in terms of expectations versus reality, I mean, it was tough. It was a lot of expecting something magical to happen. And the reality was, you know, it didn't. And then it felt like there was a lot of frustration that something magical didn't happen. So wishing for a miracle and then getting upset when it doesn't happen is generally futile, because miracles are not common, or that wouldn't be a word in the English language or many other languages spun another way.
Yeah, I think when you're looking at injuries, they always put a cap on a team, you know, and any team, you know, whether it's Baltimore, whether it's someone else. And I've made this comparison before, you know, would you rather have J.K. Dobbins or Le'Veon Bell running the football? I think everybody knows the answer to that question. So with how much piled up on them and the consistency of it too, it wasn't like the Ravens, they had the injuries in training camp, then they were healthy for the rest of the season. This was a year-long thing. It wasn't like it let up one week or the other. It was they were losing guys for weeks, for months, for the whole year, consistently. And throw that in with the COVID outbreak that happened in week 16, where they're just down to their ninth string corners, guys who have never played before or this season. You know, Robert Jackson, before taking the field against Devontae Adams, hadn't played a defensive snap that season. So it's just things like that that all add up, and the expectations of, hey, this team is fully healthy. The Ravens have built a pretty solid roster here. Let's see what they can do, versus the expectations of, all right, they're down to their entire running back room from 2020 is gone, and they have to figure it out in 10 days before week one starts. There are two little bit of expectations there that come and go with that, but we'll talk in our second segment about the reality, both of the Ravens' hot start and their cold finish. So stay tuned for that, and we'll be right back. We're all looking for an edge these days, and I'd like to thank Online Gambling for sponsoring today's podcast. If you don't know already, Online Gambling is a website dedicated to giving bettors the edge. And for the divisional round this week, my upset, I'm going with the AFC North Cincinnati Bengals. I'm going Cincinnati over Tennessee. A lot of good matchups this week, but bet on for here, I think it's a good bet. But throughout the playoffs, They're providing the best bets, the best NFL tips, news, and more to help make your bets as informed as ever. And this week, the experts at OnlineGambling.com, they're sending a challenge of picking my division or an upset, an underdog that, in my opinion, could pull off a huge victory in the Cincinnati Bengals. So if you're thinking about backing an underdog in the divisional rounds, make sure you head to OnlineGambling.com before you do. Online Gambling gives bettors the edge by providing the best and most trusted information to help you make the best decisions possible before placing a bet. That includes their OG tip section where you can see their underdog picks as well as the inside track on how to beat the odds throughout the NFL playoffs. Make sure you visit OnlineGambling.com/NFL for all the latest news, tips, and info to beat the odds and give you the edge throughout the playoffs. Remember, OnlineGambling.com/NFL to make the most of this year's playoffs. We return our second segment of this Locked On Ravens Thursday edition. Kevin Ostreicher still here with Spencer Schultz. And Spencer, we talked a bit about those expectations in the first segment, but you're looking at the reality of the situation. And the Ravens, I think, both outperformed in a big way, but then also the cold finish has to say, well, they set up these expectations. They're 8-3. They're like, all right, this team is definitely a playoff team and they're going to win these games and make the playoffs, but they lose 6 straight. And I talked about the dual expectations, but there were also dual realities of the Ravens started off, I think, hotter than many, many expected with the injuries they went through. But then really the cold stretch, the 6 straight, I go back to the word shocked in both situations. I was shocked they started off so hot and I was shocked they ended so cold. Now, the hot start wasn't as shocking because I thought their schedule, even though the talent they had lost was there, the talent they had, I thought they could have beaten some of those teams there. But Spencer, what does the word shock to you mean in this situation, both with their hot start and their cold finish? Was that a word that you kept coming back to?
Yeah, absolutely. The shock was there. And what it's a shame that the Ravens season became is because of the fact that, or why it's such a shame is because of the fact that they were able to debunk the narrative that they couldn't play from behind and that they couldn't throw themselves back into games and all that, so forth. I mean, Lamar Jackson against the Chiefs comes out, throws a pick 6, throws another terrible interception, and from there, rebounded, played incredibly efficient football, was able to wash that out and go score when they needed to. And then the defense was able to finish as well. Odafe Owe able to make a special play and win that game that really stole that game out of the jaws of defeat. And then they're aggressive. They go for it on fourth down, and they close out that game with a quarterback power on fourth down, and they did it. And then again, they're supposed to be, you know, they have this emotional high, and then they go play the Lions, and Hollywood Brown has a couple of drops. Lamar Jackson slinging the ball over the field, pushing the ball downfield like no other quarterback really has ever done to start a season, and drop. The defense can't get off the field. The Lions have a dominant fourth quarter. They're dominating time of possession. And guess what? Lamar Jackson is able to convert on fourth down again, fourth and long, fourth and 19, and pepper a throw to in between kind of level 2 and level 3 to Sammy Watkins. And then they're able to go steal another one by Justin Tucker, another miracle, hitting the longest field goal in the history of the National Football League. And I have the picture of it right over my head if you're viewing on YouTube. And then they continue. They, you know, beat down on the Broncos. They beat down on the Chargers. They're okay. They've kind of been able to navigate themselves through the turmoil of the initial injuries of Marcus Peters, and they're starting to be able to integrate the running backs, Devontae Freeman and Latavius Murray, effectively. Murray has a big run against both the Chargers and the Broncos, and they blow them out of the water. So they look like, all right, they've, you know, congealed, they've healed, but the kind of monster in the closet was that more injuries are inevitably going to happen throughout the season. You are going to be shorthanded, and adding COVID on top of that, you know, they end up playing a game where they have 10 guys out with COVID in addition to their starting quarterback, in addition to, you know, their Marcus Peters and Jake, all those guys. So it just continued to snowball and turn into an avalanche where you're playing without, you know, you're playing without 4 all pros in the last 2 years. And you're unable to have any confidence in what you defined yourself as philosophically in terms of what you do defensively, what you do offensively, what type of team you are, you know, a power running team that likes to push the ball downfield. Well, that's gone without Lamar Jackson. You're a press man team that likes to simulate pressure. Well, that's gone because you can't rely on Marlon Humphrey or Marcus Peters anymore. You know, even Deshaun Elliott goes out, you know, all these different guys going down at different points in time. Calais Campbell missing time, Brandon Williams missing time all throughout the course of the season. So it compounded. So, you know, the first half of the season and even deeper, I think in week 11, maybe they're the number one seed in the AFC. So they had a historic fall. But I think if you look around what the kind of if you remove the purple tinted glasses and look what the national media has to say, it's, you know, they were hurt. They were banged up. They couldn't get it done. People were impressed with the moral victories of being able to take the Packers to the wire and the Rams to the wire. Two teams that are, you know, probably one of them is probably going to play in an NFC championship game, maybe a Super Bowl, if not. So at the end of the day, it just was too much to overcome. And, you know, the people point to the Tennessee Titans who finish up as the one seed. Well, they have their starting quarterback, and they also play the Jaguars and the Texans four times. They also had the, you know, the Colts number this year as well, but not exactly a daunting division. You know, if you're, they're playing in a division with two playoff teams and a Browns team that was feisty all the way to down to the, you know, final couple weeks of the season, then maybe it's a different story there. But when you lose a quarterback that you devote so much of what you are down the stretch and remove that, it's difficult to overcome. And, you know, that Rams game was mighty impressive, but they didn't score a touchdown offensively. The Steelers game through interceptions in the red zone, you know, had an opportunity to punch them in the mouth and Ben Roethlisberger's career, couldn't get that done. Couldn't buy a stop. So, the proverbial sand dial, ran out. So the magic stopped that was there in those primetime games early in the season. And the Ravens need to remember that. And need to remember that that's what they were capable of doing. They were capable of sweeping through the NFL when they still weren't even close to full strength. They were the most handicapped team in the NFL from the start. They missed, you know, like I said, four All-Pros missed pretty significant time. Two of them playing one game between Peters and Stanley, not to mention, you know, your two running backs that are probably top 12 in the NFL in 20, you know, no worse in every metric. They were both top 10. In terms of rushing yards over expectation, forced missed tackles, you know, every metric, they were both top 10. So it's a lot, and you're starting without that. And it was super impressive that they were able to reinvigorate themselves a couple weeks into the season and rattle off those wins. And it showed the moxie that they had, and it showed the attitude that they had. And I think Mark Andrews embodied it a lot of this year in games when they were trailing. He played better when they were trailing. He went harder. He ran harder. He broke more tackles. He, you know, played more with more physicality when they were trailing. The urgency picked up. You know, they did, and that's what really, again, expectations versus reality set them up for disappointment and set fans up for disappointment, because they were able to do the magical over and over and over again in the beginning of the season. But eventually, you know, it's going to be regression towards the mean, and they ended up about 500 in those one score games. So I think that they were 21 points scored away from, you know, in their wins from being the one seed, or in their losses from being the one seed. And they were like 11 points away in their wins from having the number one overall pick. So at the end of the day, you know, they couldn't put teams away. And it was the story of the season late down the stretch. And like I said, it's unfortunate because Lamar Jackson was taking strides as a passer. They were making improvements without Ronnie Stanley or Rashad Bateman or Nick Boyle, who do a lot in the pass game. So, you know, there is the first act and then the second act. So we don't get a full three-act structure there. But the third act, I guess, is now the offseason and how you rebound. So we'll see what the Ravens do to solidify themselves and if they're able to make some hay.
Yeah, and plenty of opportunities for them to improve. I mean, we saw that they have a foundation for success, even with the injuries that happened. And getting all these guys back, getting the reinforcements back, is obviously going to help them tremendously. But I think that, you know, with looking at all the graphs that have popped up, like I posted yesterday, two of them, you know, wins above replacement and all these different stats, the Ravens were the most injured team, as you talked about. You know, there's not really a debate about this, in my opinion. You can look at all the metrics and say, oh, well, this team had more, this player went out, but cumulatively throughout the entire, not just regular season, but preseason, training camp, the Ravens had all these injuries. And so that kind of tempers not only the expectations, but helps people understand the reality might not be as good as it was 2-3 months ago. The Ravens still went out there, started 8-3, had those gritty wins, the one score game wins, the come from behind wins, as you talked about. But then the reality of it was that magic did run out and they lose 6 straight and just can't get the job done. But we'll head into our final break. Coming back, we'll talk a bit about how this Ravens team can improve with a couple of positions, maybe through the draft. So stay tuned for that. And we will be right back. People think unusual circumstances mean complicated taxes, but for TurboTax Live experts, that's what makes things interesting. Maybe you inherited a condo and are renting it out, or maybe you're getting paid in crypto and aren't sure how it's taxed. For TurboTax Live experts, an interesting life can mean an even greater refund. Luckily, TurboTax Live can match you with the right expert who has experience in your unique situation and can answer all of your tax questions right from your phone or computer. They can even take care of the whole filing process for you. Whether you launched your own startup or are working multiple jobs and juggling multiple incomes, an experienced TurboTax Live expert can help you during the entire filing process or do your taxes for you from start to finish to get your tax deductions you deserve. Visit TurboTax.com to learn more. You do your thing. They've got your taxes. Intuit TurboTax Live. We're back. It's Locked On Ravens. Kevin Allstriker still here with Spencer Schultz. And Spencer, talking about that expectation versus reality, it's kind of going back to 2021, but let's look ahead now to 2022, where the Ravens will have some very important decisions to make and could lose some very key players. Now, the way that they're going to get better, there are multiple avenues for it, one of those being the draft, but they have to look to free agency as well and understand that they're probably not going to get everybody back who was on this roster in 2021. In fact, that's pretty impossible to do any offseason. But there's a lot of uncertainty surrounding a couple of positions right now. And I want to talk one offense, one defense with you and kind of get your thoughts on a couple of rookies who could maybe come in and provide a boost. Now for center, the center position, let's start there and we'll talk about both offense, defense, then I'll give you the floor. Bradley Bozeman, a player who really came into his own at center, played that position at Alabama in college, was very good at it. The Ravens tinkered with him a bit, moved him over to left guard. This season, they move him back to center, played very well, earned himself a lot of money. Center is one of the premium positions in this league. It's very hard to find a solid, good one. And the Ravens, they had one in 2021 in Bozeman. Now, it remains to be seen if the Ravens and Bozeman can come to a price point that they both feel comfortable with. It seems like Bozeman wants a lot of money, and rightfully so. The Ravens, you know, they want to get a deal that's good for him. If Bozeman does leave, there is a top flight center prospect in this 2022 draft. And Tyler Linderbaum, someone who I think can come in and fit really well. I mean, I think for a player like him and for center, there's always this controversy of how high should you pick a center? Is Linderbaum someone who should be the 14th pick in the NFL draft if Baltimore is there? That's something I want to get your thoughts on. Also on defense, though, the edge rusher position. Tyus Bowser reported with that Achilles injury. He posted pictures of him seemingly in surgery. He seems, you know, to have a long recovery ahead. There's uncertainty surrounding Justin Houston and Pernell McPhee and their futures. What is Jalen Ferguson going to bring? Can Dalen Hayes come back 100% healthy? Trayvon Walker, someone who is very intriguing. And there are a couple edge prospects, David Ajabo also, who could potentially fill a need that has become bigger over these last couple of weeks. So Spencer, when looking at Linderbaum, when looking at Walker, are these two players who, if the Ravens have a glaring hole at either come draft time, you're confident in them picking in the first round?
Yeah, both of them, they kind of are a complete opposite situation between Walker and Linderbaum. And in terms of Bradley Bozeman, I think the fact that they extended Patrick McCary a little bit early and went beyond his, what they had him in terms of being able to have him as a restricted free agent, I think that showed that, you know, they're not in the same ballpark with Bozeman and maybe what they want and what he wants. It's not very common for a Raven to hit free agency and come back. I think that he expects to have a market. I would say Bozeman is, you know, it was his first year playing center. He can get a little bit more nuanced and improve a little bit there, but I think we saw pretty much what he'll be. He's passive. He's technical. He's calm. He's a calm presence there. And it's unfortunate because the center position for the Ravens has been so volatile and all signs are pointing towards another new center. So then that brings the question of if Bozeman goes elsewhere, you know, hopefully the Ravens are like, oh, we'll get a fourth round pick in 2023 for Bradley Bozeman, whatever. So then it spurns the question of Linderbaum. What is Linderbaum? I think that first we need to look at Creed Humphrey, who was an elite tester who had elite tape, had high functional strength, was good in space, was an elite processor, and showed up really well at the Senior Bowl. You know, checked all of those boxes. And to me, it was pretty crazy that he fell as far into the second round as he did, and that there kind of was this low consensus on him. Then a year later, you know, Tyler Linderbaum comes out. And Linderbaum, to me, reminds me a lot of Garrett Bradbury from a couple of years ago, Minnesota Viking, who was in a heavy wide zone scheme, North Carolina State, Linderbaum at Iowa, both very very heavy wide zone schemes, a little bit more limited passing game at Iowa than what NC State had, but ultimately that's what you get. So Linderbaum, to me, has elite movement skills. He's super small. He was a great wrestler. You can see the leverage. I think he has really strong grip strength. He's able to lock a block once he gets it. You know, he puts his hands in the right places, gets guys under the armpit, a lot of good things. But the Ravens, unfortunately, are not a wide zone team. Wide zone is going to take advantage of reach blocks where he can get into space, move, you know, use his quickness and his urgency and his mobility and his hips to flip and turn and square guys off, wall guys off. The Ravens want guys who can move people out of the way. Linderbaum can't do that. We have not seen him do that. I don't think that is going to be his forte. I think there'll be a heavy learning curve there at the least. And if I had to pick, you know, what does Linderbaum look like in year four? I don't think it's going to be a player who's known for creating chaos by driving guys off the ball or, you know, being able to really move guys with down blocks. When he struggled, it was when there was a defender put directly over top of him. It was a little bit longer, a little bit quicker, and, you know, had more functional strength. But in pass protection, very solid. So to me, he's just not as clean as a prospect as Creed Humphrey was. And I don't understand why Humphrey was the second round guy and Linderbaum is this, you know, high first generational center pretty much. I know PFF says he's the highest graded center they've ever had in college. I'm pretty sure he's, you know, a top two highest graded center in the last decade. So I just don't see a generational prospect on tape right now. I don't think there's a lot of room for growth in his frame, but I think he can continue to get better. You know, you want to see him be able to take guys on more square, improve his angles when he does need to drive block. He wasn't asked to do it a lot. He can get better there, but to me, it just reminds me a lot of Garrett Bradbury, who has a smaller frame, is very mobile. He makes a lot of high-profile blocks that are in space. You see him go, oh, you know, he goes and pancakes a DB in space, and there's a big run, and he's running really fast, and you see these big plays, and I think that's something that Linderbaum does really well is connect in space and turn a 15-yard gain into a 30-yard gain or, you know, a 10-yard gain into a 15-yard touchdown in space, but that doesn't happen as often on a football field. But in pass protection, he's a very high-level processor. He shows the ability to anchor in pass pro, so, you know, there's some hope that there will be that functional strength there. If the Ravens are to take Linderbaum at 14, Bozeman walks, you're hoping that Ronnie Stanley's in a good place. You know, I would like the pick. I'm not sure I would love it. I think that's very high for a center. And I don't see him. I don't have him rated higher than I had Creed Humphrey rated. I don't have him higher than I had Eric McCoy rated a couple of years ago. But I think that you're going to get a high-level processor, someone who has maximum effort. And while they might not be a dominant player in terms of the ability to drive guys off the ball in the run game, I think you are going to get a safe floor as a pass protector. I think snapping is not going to be an issue, as it never should on an NFL football team, the way it has been with the Ravens the last couple of years before Bozeman. So, you know, it's, to me, it's just difficult because it's two steps back and then a step forward. You know, is Linderbaum going to come in and play at a higher level than Bradley Bozeman did? I don't think so. I think that we see him as a rookie, especially. I don't think we're going to see him really blowing that level of that consistent level of play out of the water, maybe a little bit better in space. You know, maybe you can do some pin and pull where you use Linderbaum as a pulling center a little bit, something he didn't really do much, but maybe because of his athleticism, something you can get there. He's great on screens, things of that nature. But to me, I don't see a prospect who is physically dominating guys at the point of attack, but very good in pass protection. So it's just unfortunate. It is what it is. It would be kind of a stock pick at 14. I do think there are some talented guys, Donovan West out of Arizona State, Brock Hoffman out of Virginia Tech. I think there are some centers that could end up having, you know, relatively close to the successful career that Linderbaum could. You can have a lot later. So the pick there is fine. It's safe, it feels like. You know what you're getting in many ways. It doesn't quite fit what the Ravens do now, but, you know, how much longer is Greg Roman going to be their offensive coordinator? Probably not more than 1 or 2 years at most. So I think that, you know, that can change and the scheme fit can be a little different. And it's not that the centers in the Ravens offense are necessarily asked to be the one that is run behind this driving force, but you do want them to create movement on down blocks on power concepts right now. And I don't think that we're going to see that. And Linderbaum, to me, you know, good prospect. I don't know that I'm going to have a top 10 or top 15 grade on him. I was pretty surprised. Someone that knows more about offensive line play than me, Brandon Thorne, I think, has like a top 9 grade on him, top 8 grade on him. PFF's very high on him as well. So maybe I'm in the wrong there. But to me, the tape just doesn't scream, you know, elite, generational, top prospect. And I think, again, that there is something to do with Creed Humphrey putting in a generational best in show, best in 10, 15 years rookie performance at center. So it's unfortunate the Ravens maybe couldn't grab Humphrey last year and sort that out. But again, it just feels like they're going to have to make a pick as a result of someone leaving that doesn't ultimately improve you next year. Maybe down the road, you know, it's an improvement at the center position. And maybe he is a top three, top two center, an all-pro center. But I just don't quite see it right now. I think he's going to be maybe a little bit more consistent than a Garrett Bradbury, a little bit better there. And you're going to get, you know, a top 10, top 15 center over the next 2 years and hopefully grows into top five. But it just is unfortunate in that term of Bozeman coming in, giving you that consistent play and then having to switch and use the highest first round pick that you've had since Ronnie Stanley and the second highest first round pick that you've had in the John Harbaugh era on hopefully slightly improving the center position from what you had. So that's quite difficult. On the other side of the football, as you mentioned, Trayvon Walker, to me, is a very opposite type of player from Linderbaum, where Trayvon Walker is a five-star that goes to Georgia, you know, a powerhouse in the SEC. Linderbaum is a three-star who came in as a defensive lineman, gets flipped onto center, ends up starting and having a great career as a, you know, redshirt junior. But to me, Walker is a bull in a china shop. He is a rare player. I try to think of a comparison for him, and one hasn't come to me quite yet. Hopefully it will by the end of this little scouting rant. But Walker has elite violence, elite processor against the run, elite functional strength, great in space, movement skills, all there, finishes, tenacity, what he's able to do. He has versatility. You can ask him to stand up as a traditional outside linebacker. You can ask him to put his hand in the dirt. You can ask him to be a four tech, a four eye, a three tech. There was a rep against Kentucky that I just watched today of him where he's a three tech on third down, hits a hesitation into a beautiful club, into a rip, and then spins back in and forces a quarterback off their spot. So you see, you know, there's these flashes of technical refinement. There's these flashes of game plan as a pass rusher. But it wasn't there consistently. He needs to shed quicker. He needs to have a little bit more urgency as a pass rusher. He has a prolific bull rush. He has prolific length, prolific, great functional strength as a pass rusher. His long arm bull rush, outstanding. He can just move a left tackle back into the pocket and shrink the pocket. He has the speed to be able to pursue quarterbacks outside of the pocket to run plays down. We saw him drop into coverage a lot, which obviously the Ravens are going to like. We saw him have a ton of versatility. The Ravens are going to love that. But to me, he has this prolific bull rush, and all he needs to do is push into a pull. We saw him do it against Evan Neal of Alabama and send Evan Neal, maybe as a first overall pick, top 10 pick lock, you know, send him flying. To me, there just needs to be that plan a little bit quicker. When you lock out, use that. Get guys to be moving forward or scared of being moved forward. And I think there's just a lot to unlock there. Will it ever be unlocked? That's the question. So as a run defender, very high level, can get on the field immediately. Has the athletic tools and the motor to hustle into sacks and hustle into pressures, but needs a little bit of work there. So having a Justin Houston back, having a Calais Campbell there would be imperative. I think if the Ravens, you know, it kind of feels like they really need to bring Justin Houston back as a result of the Tyus Bowser injury and continuing to have that Yoda for Odafe Owe and have him for Walker as well. If the Ravens went in that direction, would be really cool. Walker to me, you know, if you're drafting someone at 14, you're looking for someone who can come in and start off the bat. I think he can do that against the run, certainly. You know, first and second down, I think that he's going to fail to have that real plan in year one, but you're going to see it develop a little bit, and we're going to see him continue to grow as an outstanding athlete. But in terms of him or Linderbaum, you know, two very opposite players. Walker has the skills. He has the strength. He has the athleticism. He has the hustle. He has the tools to be, you know, a really high level dominant athletic force in the NFL. Whereas Linderbaum, you know, can move in space, but is limited functional strength wise. So kind of opposite prospects on each side of the ball. If you had to pick between one, it feels like if Bradley Bozeman walks and your only shot to really address center confidently is Linderbaum, you know, you might want to go in that direction. But again, I would be a little bit remiss to take a center that doesn't turn out to be an elite player at 14. And Linderbaum, I'm not quite as high on as everyone else. Walker, to me, can play immediately, you know, maybe not mentally to the extent of Linderbaum, but is going to be able to process against the run, make plays. You're confident with him on the field. You pair him with Adafe Owe, who's a little bit more of a loose athlete that is a little bit more of a speed rusher. So you've kind of got that thunder and lightning, that rush and that Sam for the foreseeable future. But there's other guys that are a little peculiar. You know, David Ajabo out of Michigan is kind of like an upside down version of Walker, where he can't play against the run right now. It's very little experience, but his pass rush plan and his counters are prolific. So, you know, there's a couple directions to go, but ultimately we need those dominoes to fall. We need to see if Justin Houston comes back. We need to see if Bradley Bozeman comes back. And from there, we'll be able to get a better picture of what the Ravens are going to do. And if they need to draft a certain position at all, whether they can go for BPA and take a corner or, you know, a tackle or whatever it is. So a safety, whatever it is. So a lot of pieces to fall, but those two players definitely intriguing, have some really high end traits that they need to, you know, build on. Linderbaum with functional strength, Walker with a little bit more urgency in his pass rush.
Yeah. And I think our conversations, you know, as the draft gets closer surrounding, all right, what positions of need does Baltimore actually need? How likely is it to take a best player available? You know, I think the ultimate decision of Bozeman's going to impact this entire offseason for the Ravens regardless, because I don't think people want to go back to, you know, the 2020 Matt Skura and the Patrick McCary, where Lamar Jackson was looking like Odell Beckham every week, snagging those passes, those snaps, almost like passes with one hand. And so the Ravens, if they're, I don't want to say forced, but if they are forced into a pick that doesn't necessarily fit the scheme as much, or the player doesn't fit what they do as much because they have lost another player, the Ravens never like panic, I think, during the draft. But, you know, in that situation, if you're losing a Bozeman type player at a position, a premium one at that, I think that, you know, something could happen there. But the draft is going to be interesting. The offseason already very interesting. But Spence, that's all I have for you today. Thank you so much for joining me here today. Obviously, tons of draft content coming from you in the coming weeks and months. What's on the docket for you up here recently?
Continuing, I've been joining Cole Jackson, Two Guys Watching Football. We're breaking down some tape. We're actually supposed to go watch the Trayvon Walker tape tonight or on Friday, and continuing to work our way through. You can find work at Baltimore Beatdown, at Ravens for Dummies on Twitter, and I'll be churning it out. If you want to, I've been joining some Twitter spaces as well, so you can find me on those occasionally, and the Baltimore Beatdown podcast, and talking ball all the way through. And going to try and find these perfect purple prospects for the Ravens, especially once those dominoes do fall.
Yeah, the purple prospect portfolio, triple P's. I still remember it well. It took me a couple weeks to get it down, but I have it down now. So those are exciting. Always the Ravens, obviously, some will fit, some won't, but it's exciting to figure out everything. And Spencer's work is great. Be sure to check it out everywhere you can. And do that, be sure to. But that's all I have for you here today on Locked On Ravens. When we get back here tomorrow, we'll be rounding out the week talking more Ravens football. So stay tuned for that, and I'll see you tomorrow.